Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us for this year's Something to Say at the Seder. If I can ask everybody to please go on mute, so this way we won't have background noise. I don't have the ability, unfortunately, to mute everybody, so please, on your own, please mute yourselves. And I would ask everybody, if you have any questions, to either put them in the chat, or I will try to answer them at the end, or you're welcome to email me afterwards or speak with me, and I'll try to answer them. This shir is always, as I mentioned, Lili Nishmas, my father, Yosef Nissim Min Yecheskel. He was a towering person in my life, and my brother and my sister's life, and we miss him very, very much. And one of the most special moments that I always had, and I know my siblings as well, was our Seder. And that's why I thought a very appropriate way to learn in his memory is to have a something to say at the Seder Shir, which we've been doing now for 15 years. So we've been trying to do different parts of the Seder. I don't try to say something on every single part of the Seder. I think it's important that people realize that any time you say Torah at the Seder or any other time is fine. You don't have to specifically associate whatever vartlach you're saying with a specific paragraph. It's always nice if it's in Yonah Diyoma, if it fits in some way. But I stress to people that the most important thing is to enjoy the Seder. Make the Seder something special for your children. And please make sure that the Seder is something that everybody looks forward to. That's the most critical part of the Seder. And that's something that I learned from my Holy Father. I will mention that this year as well is the first year that I don't have Tuvia Lefkowitz, Olav Shalom, listening to the shir. Tuvia would send me a written update of what I said right after the shir. He would take notes on his computer during the shir, and he would send me his notes right afterwards, so I would have something to be able to say at the Seder back from what I said, because a lot of what I have is from Svarim, and I don't write down on notes. And I will miss Tuvia tremendously, as many of you who knew Tuvia obviously will, as does his dear family, his wife Barbara, and his children. And I just wanted to specifically mention that I note tonight his absence, as I'm sure they note every single moment of time. And again, I'll ask everybody one last time, please put yourselves on mute. If you have background noise, I unfortunately cannot mute you, so please put yourselves on mute. Thank you. We're going to pick up tonight where we left off last year. I'm sure many of you remember that. And for those that don't, it's from Vihi Sha'amda. We have gotten up to that point in the Seder last year of Vihi Sha'amda that comes right after the part of the Seder where we had the four sons, Yochamei Rosh Chodesh, and Baruch Shomer Avto Choso. So for those that are trying to follow along in a Haggad at home, we're going to begin with the paragraph of Vihi Sha'amda. Now, one of the first and most important things that we have to understand is when we say Vihi Sha'amda Lavoseinu Vilanu, what exactly are we referring to, this Vihi? So there is a famous idea that most of us learned in probably elementary school, that it deals with this concept of the Vav standing for the six Sidrei Mishnah, the Hei standing for the Chamisha Chum Shei Torah, the Yud standing for the Aseret HaZibros, and the Aleph standing for one HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is truly an understanding that is correct. The entire bulk of the Torah, all the different aspects, the Torah Shebichsav, the Torah Shebaal Peh, that is what has allowed us to reach the point of Geula from Mitzrayim. But I'd like to explore that from a very interesting vort that I saw from a number of different poskim. The last time, please, I'm asking people to please mute themselves. I don't have the ability to do so, and it's disturbing to other people, so thank you. So the vort from the Abarbanel is, he asks, the Karban Pesach doesn't have any breads that are brought with it. Obviously, we eat matzah with it, but we're not allowed to have any chametz with it. But he points out that on Shavuos, the Shtei HaLechem, the carbon that's brought for Shavuos, specifically does have chametz type of bread that's brought with that carbon. And a carbon toda, which is a carbon of thanks, which is really what the carbon Pesach is to a certain extent, also has chametz brought with it. So why does the carbon Pesach and Pesach in general forbid the presence of chametz when we see that on Shavuos and by the giving of a carbon toda, we specifically want to celebrate with chametz? So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh brought down, and others bring down as well, that before the Yetzias Mitzrayim, we did not have the Torah. And on Shavuos, we obviously did have the Torah. And the Yetzer Hara is compared to chametz. When we have Torah, by Shavuos, in general, post-Shavuos, when we give a carbon toda, so then even though there's Yetzer Hara around, even though there are all sorts of difficulties for us, challenges for us, the Yetzer Hara is constantly trying to get us to do bad things, nevertheless, the Torah is the antidote, and the Torah allows us to go and fend off our Yetzer Hara. But when we were in Mitzrayim, we had sunk to the depths, to the 49th level of Tumah. And in that situation, it was impossible for us to go any lower, or else we would have sunk there forever. Without Torah, so we can't have chametz. And that's why Pesach had to represent pure non-Yetzer Hara. That's why there's only non-chametz. That's why there's only matzah and not chametz. A beautiful idea. And that's what Vehi She'amda represents. There are many, many other ideas in Vehi She'amda. So number one, is a machlokas, is it Vehi She'amda, like most poskim say, and like we have in our Sidurim, or is it a totally separate idea? In fact, the Rashba says, Kan Maskil Seder Haggadah. The Rashba says that this is actually where we start the Haggadah, the essence of the Haggadah. He starts from over here, and not from an earlier point in the Seder, which we would have called Magid, the beginning of Magid. So he starts Vehi She'amda, as do many other of the Rishonim, such as the Or HaChaim, and as well other Svarim, like the Shnayim Yodea and the Zevach Pesach. So all of these Svarim all feel that the proper start of the Megillah, of the Haggadah, is in fact from Vehi She'amda. But the standard understanding is that there is a Vav there, which connects it to the previous paragraph of Baruch Shomer Haftachoso. So what is this connection? So many of the Mefarshim say that this deals with the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us. Hashem swore He would take us out of Mitzrayim. And that Shavua, that swearing, is what allows us to guarantee that we'll get through every Tzara. Whether it's a Tzara that we have now in Ukraine with our brethren in Ukraine, whether it's a Shoah, Holocaust, that my parents and many of the people on this Zoom session, either their parents or they themselves, they're still Holocaust survivors that went through the Shoah, what they went through. So how did we get through that? How does a person get through such terrible tragedies, such difficult circumstances? It's Vehi She'amda. It's this Haftacha. Baruch Shomer Haftachoso. If Hashem promises to us that we'll get through something, we will get through it. And that's the connection. Vehi She'amda. This promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to get us through. The Sefer Magid Dvorav LeYaakov brings down an additional idea. He says that even though we sin, even though objectively we deserve to be wiped out sometimes, we unfortunately have done such evil and bad things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would, on an objective basis, say, yeah, you taka deserve to be destroyed. This Haftacha, this Machshava that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had, that He's going to save us no matter what, that we are going to never be wiped out, that is always at the forefront. That's Vehi She'amda. This idea will always save us. The Sefer Kava Yosha says, one of the reasons that we raise our cup of wine is because the Vehi refers to Hashem. And that's why we raise the cup of wine in His honor. Vehi She'amda, it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu that gets us out of every tzara. It's not our skills, it's not the wonderful Tzahal pilots with their F-16s that get us out of trouble, although that Hishtadlis, as I always mention, is critical and necessary, and we thank those unbelievably brave soldiers for protecting Am Yisrael today. And we thank all of the people that physically go and battle for Klal Yisrael, whether it's in a government type of a battle, or whether it's in an army type of a battle, or other efforts that we do ourselves, yes, we have to do that, but we have to recognize it's always ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we understand when we raise the cup up, we're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that truly saved us. There is a very interesting gematria. Always people like gematrias from my favorite Haggadah that I mentioned, the Beis Avram, in his parish, the Per Aaron. So he brings down that the gematria of Vehi She'amda, which adds up to 441, Vehi is 22, She'amda is 419, so it adds up to 441, is the gematria of Emes. Truth, Emes, honesty, which my father represented to me as the paradigm of an honest person. So that Emes, that Yashrus, that Ehrlichkeit, that is what gets us through everything. When we act in an Ehrlicher fashion, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is Emes, right? It begins with an aleph, has the letter M, which is the middle of the alphabet, and it ends with a tof. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's signature, so to say, is Emes. So when we act, we're supposed to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we act in a way that is emistic, that's yashrus, that's erlichkeit, so then that will get us through any trouble. There are a number of other reasons why we specifically raise the cup at the Hish Amda. So another reason is because that the zuchus of Yayin Nesach has saved us. Why are the Jewish people still around? Right? Mark Twain wondered. Winston Churchill wondered. Many other great statesmen, many other anti-Semites have wondered, how come we're still around? And one of the answers is because we don't assimilate. And one of the reasons that we don't assimilate is wine. We don't associate. We don't go to bars. We don't go and drink wine with non-Jewish people. And therefore, as a result, this has protected us. And Chazal tell us, Gozru al Yenam Mishum Benoseim. One of the reasons that we don't intermarry, one of the reasons that we don't assimilate, is we don't drink and eat with them. There are many gezeros about Pas Akum, about Bishul Akum. There are gezeros about Yayin Nesach and others. And therefore, this keeping to ourselves is the formula. Vehi Sha'amda. That's why we raise the cup of wine, to remind ourselves that we have to be unique, that we have to be different than the Gai Shevelt. Another reason that's brought down, Kishem Shayayin Nishtane L'Shevach Ayidei Shadarcho. So wine is pressed. You take a grape and you stomp it. You press the grapes. So when you press the grapes, you're damaging the grapes. You're hurting the grapes, Kaviyocho. You're changing the grapes. An objective observer would say, wow, you're destroying those grapes. But what happens after you pound the grapes, after you smash the grapes? You derive from it the most beautiful thing, wine. You derive from it a delicious juice. You've raised it from being a Bari Priya Eitz to a Bari Priya Gofen, a higher level bracha. And that, the post can bring down, is what happens to the Jewish people. When you oppress us, when you make life difficult for us, we don't become less valuable, we become even more valuable. And this is a secret for our success. And in fact, there's a famous Medrash on Purim that it says, Gedola Hasaras Tabas Yoser Me'arboim Hushmone Nevi'im. That when Paro took off his ring and said to Haman, when Achashverosh took off his ring and said to Haman, do whatever you want to the Jewish people, that woke us up. That threat of annihilation, that shook us, and that woke us up from our slumber. The 48 Nevi'im that exhorted us to do good, to do good, to do good. Sometimes we don't listen to the Nevi'im, but it's only sometimes under the threat of persecution that the Jewish people rise and do what we're supposed to do, ultimately and finally. It'd be great if we did it before we were persecuted and punished. But that's another reason, V'hish Amda. It's this idea that sometimes these persecutions that we go through, they make us into better Jews, they make us into better people. We only have to realize that before the persecution and not wait until we're never persecuted to go and become better people. And another reason why we specifically have V'hish Amda here with the wine, so he says, Kos, the gematria of Kos is 86. And the gematria of Bris Mila, if you include the kolel, it's a little bit cheap, but many times we include the word itself, so we can plus one. So the gematria of Mila is 85. And when you plus one for the word, that makes it 86. So there's the connection between Mila and the kos. And therefore, we lift up the kos to say that Bris Mila is another one of the things that has saved us throughout the years. Mitzvah HaMila, Hisha'om de Lavosenu, Ubischusu Yotzim Mitzrayim. We know, we'll say it a little bit later in tonight's shiur, about the blood. B'domayich chayi, b'domayich chayi. B'domayich chayi refers to the Karban Pesach, one blood, and the Bris Mila, the other blood that we have on this night. So therefore, these two bloods, these two mitzvahs, which we were bereft of mitzvahs, at erom ve'eryah, we didn't have a lot of mitzvahs, but these two mitzvahs that we did on the night of Pesach, we did Bris Mila and we did the Karban Pesach, these two bloods went and protected us and got us out of Mitzrayim and are protectors for us for all time. It's interesting, these are mitzvahs aseh, these are positive commandments, they're the only two mitzvahs aseh for which there is, if you don't do them, a chiyuv of kares. Being cut off early, Rachmana Litzlan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cutting you down in the prime of your life before you either reach the age of 60 or Rachmana Litzlan, even to cut off your progeny, Rachmana Litzlan. So these two mitzvahs are obviously of great paramount importance. They got us out of Mitzrayim, but the continuation of doing these mitzvos, and we can't do the Karban Pesach today, although hopefully this year we still will, but if we unfortunately cannot, so our talking about the Karban Pesach, learning about the Karban Pesach, are critical to fulfilling this idea that in the schus of the Karban Pesach, we got out of Mitzrayim. B'domaye chayi, b'domaye chayi. Now, what's this idea of this lashon of v'hi sha'amda, that we stood up, v'hi sha'amda, this is what stands us up. So some of the Mepharshim bring down that the idea of Amida is alluding to something that can be done very, very simply. It doesn't take a lot of effort to stand up for most people, Baruch Hashem. So it says, Be'enei Oyveinu, in the eyes of our enemies, destroying us is felt to be an easy thing. V'hi sha'amda, this idea that they so easily think that they can destroy us, yet we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu preventing that, that's what we allude to in V'hi sha'amda. They so easily think they're going to destroy us, but they will never be successful because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Furthermore, we have an idea from the Sefer Tchelis Mordechai. He brings down that we have a havtacha that not only is there Karban Pesach, but every year at this time, in the season of Pesach, there is an opportunity for us to be Gola, for us to be redeemed from the exiles. The Ukrainian Jews that are suffering right now, so they have to know that there's a geula coming for them, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save them every time, every year, during Pesach, during the month of Nisan, it's a month of geula. And that's what we remind ourselves, v'hi sha'amda. And we'll see later on, tzei l'mad. So some have the girsa, tzei v'lamed. This is one of the most essential things that we have to teach over on the night of Pesach. And if you got it to Labincha, parents have to teach their children, grandparents have to teach their grandchildren, that v'hi sha'amda, this idea in every generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save us. And we have to transmit that and make sure that our children, grandchildren, have that emunah and bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have gotten from our parents. I certainly got from my parents. The Maral Diskin says that these decrees can be nullified. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, even though the nations have given decrees against us, I will nullify them. You don't have to worry about it. And the classical example is that the decree was supposed to be that we would be in Mitzrayim for over 400 years. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shortened that decree to 210 years, as we all know. Finally, the Perish Acher brings down the idea that this is a shvua from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu swore. So therefore, while we sometimes may not merit it, but the shvua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will not ever abrogate his shvua, and therefore we will be saved under all circumstances. What does it mean when it says, Shebechol dor v'dor, in every generation, they stand to go and, chas v'sholom, destroy us? So the Avudram brings down that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put in every generation those that are interested in Nebuch in our destruction to show us hashgachoso. It's to remind us that he runs the world. That's why we have persecutions in every generation. And in fact, it's brought down from the Svarim, Shalorak Shahatzala Hitova. We have to recognize that not only is our saving a good thing, but the Tzara is a good thing, because through this Tzara, through the persecutions that we have, Gamzu Litova, it always will result eventually in something good for the Jewish people. So that's why we have to understand that this Tzara, what we never wanted and we don't ask for it, is always to our benefit as well. We have to also understand, the Chukas Pesach says that we never get these Tzaras unless we deserve them. As much as I just said, the Tzaras are good for us, they're only good for us if we never deserve them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never brings upon us Tzaras unless we actually deserve them, although he will save us even if we don't deserve them sometimes. And then the Tziv brings down, one might have thought that it was just our good luck that we got through something. So therefore, we have to realize that it's never just our good luck, that it's not our mazel that gets us through this, it's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's an interesting question that the Chukas HaPesach then asks as well. Does it really, if you go through history, does every single generation have a nation that was trying to destroy us? Were there no good times? Right? We always talk in general about the good period of time that the Jewish people had in Spain. I don't think, if you really look at history so well, that was such a good time. But one could make the argument that there were galluses that were not so horrific. There are people that could point to Gallus America and say, it's not such a terrible gallus. So we have to understand that it is galus, and it is terrible to be in galus. And that's what the Chukas HaPesach says. He says, sometimes we think that there's nothing terrible going on in our generation. But every now and then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us that there's terrible things going on, and he's just made them go away. We have to realize, b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu chaluseinu. We sometimes only read about tapes, or we only read historical records 20, 50, 100 years later about what somebody tried to do, or what was somehow miraculously stopped from happening. We didn't even realize it at the time. So the Chukas HaPesach says, yes, b'chol dor v'dor, whether you realize it or not, they're trying to hurt us in every generation. And therefore, it's critically important that we understand that it's through the Ashgach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Hisha Amda, that we get through everything. The Maaseh Hashem brings down, Hashem doesn't always destroy our enemies. He sometimes just saves us, but he lav dafka always destroys our enemies. So don't think because an enemy of ours is not destroyed, it doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hasn't saved us. The critical thing is that we are saved, and lav dafka, that our enemies should be destroyed. The other Mefarshim, such as Rabbi Cheskel Levinstein, so he brings down that there's also two aspects of destruction of us. There's a spiritual as well as a physical. They're not always intertwined. Sometimes it can be a pure spiritual destruction where the physical is not so bad. One could say that that's Galus America. So when people say, oh, b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu chaluseinu, we have it so good over here. No, there's a tremendous spiritual destruction. How many Jewish people in the United States don't know that they're Jewish? How many Jewish people in the United States are not going to be celebrating Pesach? They'll be celebrating another holiday, Rachmana Litzlan, this coming weekend. So there's spiritual as well as physical destruction. Lav davka, they're always together. But b'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, there is going to be, unfortunately, challenges that we have to overcome. Why does the B'davka use in the Pasuk that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu Humatzi lenu miyodam? Why do we use the terminology HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Vilna Gaon brings down that we use this terminology HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show that there are many different aspects. It's not just the aspect of Hashem, which is an aspect of mercy, or the aspect of Elohim, which is an aspect of justice. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a more all-encompassing term. And it says that this goes through Gevurah and Tovos and all sorts of ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves. It's not just one way. It's a more all-encompassing term. Then the idea of Matzilenu Miyodom, it's that the tragedy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has arranged for us in the world is also usually the way that we get out. Minha Maka, from the Maka itself, Misakin Ritiya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the bandage. So we see this many times. We see that in Paro, who was the one who decreed all these evil decrees, Moshe Rabbeinu was raised in his house. And we have numerous such examples throughout our history. And this is an idea of the Nahafichu, right? Esther was in the king's palace. Haman thought, wow, I'm in good with the queen. And yet, that was his downfall. Okay, let's go on to the next paragraph, Tzeil Mad. So this paragraph is an interesting paragraph for a number of reasons. So the Abarbanel says that we're leaving Pesach now momentarily. Say, leave what we've been talking about, Pesach, and we're going to have to go back to our history, to Lavan or Arami, and figure out why we got into this mess. How do we get into Pesach that we needed Yetzias Mitzrayim? It all starts from Lavan or Arami. So say, go out from what we're talking about, the Seder, and let's go back and discuss something else. The Iyun Tfila says that, I mentioned this before, he doesn't read it Tzeil Mad, he said Tzeiv Lamed. The purpose of the Seder is to teach the children, the grandchildren. So that's a critical and essential part of the Seder. Tzei Umad, go, you have to go. That's why you have to have sessions prepare at the Seder. Something to say at the Seder. The parents have to prepare. The kids all come to the Seder with huge volumes of books. They're excited and they want to say Torah. But the parents have to prepare. The grandparents have to prepare to make sure that they teach the children. And not just that the children, the grandchildren, teach them, which is beautiful. But the mitzvah is v'igad et lebincha. So tzei v'lamed. You have to go out and make sure you're prepared for the Seder and to go teach your children. In the Ritva, he brings down that this idea, v'hisha amda, is critical that we see this from Lavan or Arami, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us in every generation, one of the best examples of this, we're going back to what we just said, V'ishamda, let's give a very practical example of how this works. So the Abarbanel points out exactly what the Ritva is alluding to, that there are multiple things that happen with Lavan Arami that parallel Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we can see them very clearly there. So, for example, it says, Kiger Yezaracha, that your children will be strangers in a strange land. Well, Yaakov Goreitz Lavan. Well, that's a perfect example. And then it says, that when you go down to Mitzrayim, you'll see what happens to them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of Lavan. So we saw what happened to him. And he came to Lavan in a dream and said, don't you dare touch Yaakov. Then it says, when you leave Mitzrayim, you leave Rechush Gadol. So that happened with Lavan as well. That's V'hishamda. This happens with Chol Dor V'dor. These types of things happen. And that we went down from Lavan. Yaakov left Lavan with a tremendous Rechush Gadol. And finally, it says, so he had a tremendous amount. So this teaches us that we leave Mitzrayim, and in all the future geulas as well, we will leave with tremendous goodness, and this is the haftach of Hisha'amda that we're promised. The Vilna Gaon adds that many times the Yeshua is not so visible. Right? He says, from Lavan, we have no idea what Lavan really wanted to do to us. We know from the Mefarshim what Lavan wanted to do to us, but Lav Davka, do you see it from the Chumash itself? So that's the way it is in history. We don't always see all the evil things that our enemies wanted to do to us. And the Psukim don't show it to us, but this is a Haftacha that they're trying to destroy us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save us. The Sefer Maisib Rebbe Eliezer, he brings down that Tzeil Mad is that we have to understand how important it is not to intermarry, not to assimilate. That's the whole reason why we were taken out of Mitzrayim, is we remained Mitzuyanim, as we'll talk about maybe later on, that we were able to stay unique and isolated, even though we were in the midst of a nation that was filled with Shtufei Zima, filled with immorality and all sorts of improper morals. So it says that the reason why we were saved was because we kept ourselves separate. And they wanted to destroy us. Their sinna was so high on us, nevertheless, we didn't assimilate to them. And that's what saved us throughout all of our history. The Sefer Marbel Lesaper brings out an interesting reason why we went to Lavan Arami. Why does that come up next? Say Lumad, me Lavan Arami. He says, that happened on Pesach night, that whole story with Lavan, running up to Yaakov, and saying, hey, what are you doing? What are you leaving me alone here without letting me know? He says, that story happened on Pesach night. He brings various reasons how we can prove this. But that was on Pesach night, and therefore there are piyutim that people say on Pesach that allude to that as well. The Maharal brings down an interesting point, and this is really anti-Semitism 101. He brings down the people who hate the Jewish people, Nebuch, all of the anti-Semites of the world, Lo machmas siba klal. They have no reason to hate us. One would have thought that Paro and the Mitzrayim would have been the happiest people in the world to have the Jews there. We saved their country. And how many times throughout history have the Jewish people come into a country, helped build the economy, helped make things go really well, did financially well for themselves, and because of jealousy, because of other people not working as hard as us, other people not putting in the same effort that we did, being jealous of us, they then blame everything on the Jews. They kick us out and kill us and persecute us and take away our property. So this is a pattern that we saw from Lavan Harami. Lavan had no boys until Yaakov came. That's why Rachel and Leah had to go out and be his shepherds. He wasn't zochah to have boys. As soon as Yaakov comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses with boys. He wasn't necessarily very financially successful. He has to send out his two daughters to be his shepherds. No, once Yaakov comes, he builds up love, and love becomes a financial success. And all of a sudden, who does he think he has to blame? He blames Yaakov for all of his troubles. What troubles did he have? So Lavan is the paradigm of pure, outright sinas chinam, outright baseless hatred for the Jewish people. Paro did the same thing. The Jewish people were so good to Paro and the Mitzrayim. So what can we do to possibly persecute the Jewish people? It makes no sense whatsoever. That's why the Maharal says, look at the comparisons between Lavan and Paro. Now, where do we see that Lavan wanted to wipe out the Jewish people at all? So the Shiboli Leket brings down that it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him at night and tells Lavan, you better not do anything to them. Now, it doesn't say what he wanted to do to them, but from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to come to Lavan and say, don't do what you're intending to do, so we can get an inkling about what Lavan wanted to do to the Jewish people. And they bring down an interesting idea that sometimes machshava is connected to maisa. When a Jewish person wants to do something good, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts as if you did it. If somebody wanted to come to the Shia tonight, but his internet's not working, and he's fiddling around and trying to get onto the Shia, and then the Shia's over by the time he fixes his internet, well, it'll be available on a recording. So don't worry about it. You can get it the next day. But let's say you couldn't get it the next day. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim says, check mark, you listen to an hour Shia on the Haggadah. The guy didn't hear a word. His internet wasn't working. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzariv his machshava to be a maisa. So by Jews, it only works in a positive way. By the Goyim, it works in a negative way as well. So Lavan wanted to kill the Jewish people. He wanted to wipe us out. Paro wanted to wipe us out. So their machshava, their intention, is mitztarif l'maisa. It counts as if they did. And therefore, they're punished as if they did. By us, by Yidden, it only applies in two areas, in terms of immoralities and in terms of avodah zarah. In those situations, for various reasons, which I won't go into right now, so even a machshava about immorality, a machshava about a avodah zarah, could Rachmana Litzlan count against the person, even though he didn't physically do something. Okay. Notice the difference in the language. By Lavan, it says that Lavan, bikesh, right? Bikesh lakor. The Lashon is bikesh lakor esakol. And by Paro, right? By Paro, it says Gozar. So what's the difference between this Lashon of Bikesh and Gozar? So Chasam Sofer says a very interesting idea. He says, Lavan didn't do anything. He just Bikesh Lassos, but he wasn't successful. He didn't do it. Paro was even a worse Rasha than Lavan. He actually did things. Shit Bias Hascharim Bayar. He threw us into the Nile. So Paro was even worse. That's why the difference in the language, Bikesh versus Gozar. Reb Chaim HaLevi from the Brisker dynasty, Reb Chaim Brisker. So he brings down the following shaila. He says, why did the Haggadah try to show us the difference between Lavan and Paro? In fact, it appears that Shanira Yidezeh, Shemiyat Berishasu Shaparo. From what a lot of the things I just pointed out, Lavan was like the root of the evil. Lavan wanted to kill everybody, right? Be careful. Right, Lavan was Bikesh Lakor Esakol, and Paro, he just was interested in wiping out the women, wiping out the men and leaving the women. So we're seeming to say that Paro is better than Lavan. So what are we gaining by the Baal Haggadah inserting this paragraph? So Reb Chaim Brisker has a beautiful teretz. He says Paro was crafty. Paro was horribly smart. He said, I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you can't wipe out all the Jewish people. Lavan tried, he was unsuccessful. If I try to wipe out all the Jewish people, I'll be unsuccessful as well. So you know what I'm going to do? I'll wipe out the men. And then the women will be left, they'll have no partners, so they'll have to go and be absorbed by the Egyptian men. And this way, I'll eventually wipe them out. I won't wipe them out successfully if I attack them both, but I'll be crafty. I'll do it with a slyness. I'll do it in an underhanded way, and I'll outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochu. And therefore, that's why Paro is actually far worse than Lavan. And that's why it's not, oh, wow, look at Lavan. Paro is not as bad as Lavan. No, Paro was actually far worse than Lavan. Another idea of Tzeil Mad is that you don't realize sometimes how evil the secular world can be. So you have to leave the Beis Medrash sometimes, Tzeil Mad, and look out there and look and see the terrible things that can be going on in a secular society that doesn't have the morals of the Torah to guide us. And that's what it means. Tzeim in a ohel. You sometimes have to leave your Beis Medrash and see the rishus in the world in order to be able to understand it, in order to know, ma bikesh lovet lasos liyakov. Yaakov had to leave the Beis Medrash and see for himself the rishus of the world. That's not saying that you have to leave the Beis Medrash to do that, but sometimes Tzeil Mad, if you really want to understand what's going on, you can't just sit in the Beis Medrash. You have to go and see the wickedness and be able to go and fight it under the appropriate situations. Okay. In the next paragraph, it says that Vayered Mitzrayma. Aram Yovid Avi. Vayered Mitzrayma. This lashon of Vayered. So the Sisei Chaim brings down that the Yerida here is a spiritual Yerida. A Yerida could be a physical Yerida, but here it's talking about Vayered Mitzrayma. And he says the most beautiful vart. If you're going to remember a vart from tonight, this is it. He said, leaving Eretz Yisrael caused a spiritual Yerida. They were in Eretz Yisrael. As difficult as it was, as much as there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, they were possibly going to die if they were in Eretz Yisrael. Vayered Mitzrayma. There's a Yerida, spiritual, when you leave Eretz Yisrael. Person, there are great individuals that never left Eretz Yisrael. Once they were in Eretz Yisrael, they said, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael under any circumstance. We have to know that Eretz Yisrael is our home. We have to know that the whole idea of bringing Korban Pesach, we all want to bring Korban Pesach. We can't bring a Korban Pesach here in Woodmere. We can't bring a Korban Pesach in whatever Pesach place you're going to be at, your relatives, your own house, a hotel. The only place you can bring a Korban Pesach is in Yerushalayim HaBnuyah, in the Azara, and to eat it in the confines of Yerushalayim. Be'ezus Hashem, this year, next Shabbos, that's what we'll all be doing. And the unlikely chance that that's not true, be next year, but for certain, the Shana Abba be Yerushalayim. That's what the Shach says, the Sisei Chaim. Now, the Rokeach brings down a more technical explanation of what it means, Vayered. When we have the world in a globe or in a map, so we always put the Arctic on the top and Antarctic on the bottom. So who says that that's the way the world was created? In fact, we're taught in various Gemaras that the area of the Kodesh Kodashim was created first, the Evin HaShasiyah, and everything was created from there. So that's, so to say, the top of the world. And therefore, when you leave Eretz Yisrael, it's a physical Vayered. You're going from the high point of the world, you're going down. That's why it uses the Lashon of Vayered Mitzrayma. Then the paragraph says, we Vahisham Legoi Gadol Otsum Varov. What is this terminology of these three words? Why these three Lashonos? So, Rav Sadia Gaon brings down an interesting idea. He says that this represents several aspects. This Gadol, Otsum, V'Rav are referring to different things. So, he says that Gadol, that's a reference to the growth in the Jewish family, the numbers of people, the physical numbers of people, as it says, V'Eschecho L'Goy Gadol. So, that's a reference to, we went from 70 people, and we went down to Mitzrayim, and we became a nation of 600,000 men, well over several million people. The idea of Otsum, what does that mean? So he says that we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, Mi goy gadol asher lo elokim b'krovim elav, b'chol kor'einu elav. When we call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that makes us strong. So that's what it means when it says Otsum. And then finally, Rav, what is that a reference to? That's the unbelievable wealth of Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he gave us the Torah. Mi goy gadol asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim kechol haTorah. So that's what the Rav represents. So we became a nation, gadol otzum v'rav. We became physically numerous. We became great daveners. By Yitzhak el Hashem, we cried out to Hashem. That's what got us out of Mitzrayim. Our tefillos get us out of trouble. We think always that it's just what we physically do. Well, I solved this problem by doing A. But we always have to remember that whatever that A is, whatever that action is, it has to be accompanied with tefillah. I always mention this to people. Before you take any medicine, before you do any refuah, before you undergo a procedure, you have to say, Yirotzom Fanech Hashem Elokai V'Elokei Avosai Shetei Esek Ze Li L'Refuah. A person has to say that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are going to make this medicine work or make this procedure be successful. The doctor is a shaliach. The doctor isn't the ultimate rofe. Hashem is the ultimate rofe. So that's what's alluded to with our tefillah. And then, of course, Varav is our learning of Torah. The more Torah we learn, the better we are. Now, it says we went down onus al pi hadibur. We went down, we were forced to go down. That's the next paragraph where it starts to explain Vayered Mitzrayma. Onus al pi hadibur. We were forced to go down. So where do you say that we were forced to go down? So some of the Mefarshim, such as the Orchus Chaim, explain that it says Vayered instead of Vayisa. Chasam Sofer says it should have said Vayisa Yaakov, but it says Vayered Mitzrayim. It should have said Vayisa Yaakov Mitzrayim, But instead it says Vayered, so that alludes to the fact that he was forced to go down. This Lashon of Vayered is a forced Lashon, as opposed to some other Lashon, such as the Chasam Sofer says, Vayisa Yaakov. Shibaleit Leket says that it comes from the Lashon Al Tira Meridor Mitzrayim. Yaakov is told, don't be fearful about going down to Mitzrayim, implying that he had a pachad about going down to Mitzrayim, which meant that he didn't go down willingly. And only after HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, my dear Yaakov, don't worry, I myself am going down with you in Mitzrayim, a very important idea, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in all of our difficulties. So it says that only then was Yaakov Avinu able to, so to say, be allowed to go down or went down to Mitzrayim on that understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would go down with him. But until then, he was, so to say, forced to go down onus al pi adibur. It was only with this voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him, you'll be okay, I'll be with you, that he ultimately went down. Furthermore, the Mefarshim bring down Rashi on the pasuk says Shoyametzah Yitziyosu Me'Eretz Yisrael L'Chutz Laretz. Again, the same idea. He didn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. A great tzaddik, a great Jew, wants to live his life in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, anything that forced him to leave Eretz Yisrael, even Hashem telling him to leave Eretz Yisrael, was painful to Yaakov, and he didn't want to go. The Ritva adds over here. He knew Nebuch the Tzaris that his children would have. He saw the Ruach HaKodesh, the Tumah of Mitzrayim, and he was afraid, maybe, even though there's a Haftacha, that they're going to come out, but they're going to sink so low, maybe they'll sink to that 50th level, they won't come out. And that's what he was afraid of, and that's why he didn't want to go down. The Zevach Pesach said he was afraid of four things. Number one, he said, Yismayit Zaro, Yidesha Mitzrayim, Yahargu, Bebon of Venosav. He says, we're going down with 70 people, we're going to come back with 30 people, because they're going to constantly persecute us and wipe us out. We're never going to multiply. So he was concerned about his Zera continuing. That was point number one. Number two, he says that when we go down there, maybe, Shema, Tistalik, Meminu, Ashchina. He says, I'm going to lose my Ruach HaKodesh going out of Eretz Yisrael, and I don't want to be without the constant, so to say, connection to HaKodesh Baruch Hu. And then he said, maybe I'm going to die in Mitzrayim, and I won't be Zochet to Kevi Yisrael. So he was worried about being buried in Eretz Yisrael. What a very important idea. And finally, he was saying, maybe, again, as I mentioned before, it's going to be so bad down there because of all the Tumah, that maybe, even though Hashem promised they'll take us out, it's just like Yaakov said, Katonti, Mikol HaChasidim, Mikol HaEmes, Hashem Osisu Esav Decha. Hashem promised him, don't worry, I'll take you out of Aram Naraim, and I'll bring him back to Eretz Yisrael. But he was concerned that maybe he used up all of his merits with all the difficulties that he was somehow saved from. So Yaakov Avinu thought, Katonti Mikol HaChasidim, I've used up all my merits. So Yaakov Avinu said, maybe my children, you're promising them they'll come out, but they're going to be so Nebuch steeped in Tumah that what's going to happen is that they're not going to come out. So that's what he was afraid of. Onus al pi adibur. He was forced to go down. That's what it means. Now, how do we know the paragraph continues and it says, Shlo yarir Yaakov avinu lishtakeya b'mitzrayim el l'gursham. He didn't go down there to settle there. He just went down there on a temporary basis. How do we know that? So the Sifri says, the Lashon of Vayerid Mitzrayim is a temporary Lashon. Otherwise, it would have said Vayeshev Mitzrayim. So again, the word Vayerid can teach us many different things. And from using the Lashon of Vayerid, it teaches us that he, Bedavka, was going there only for a shorter period of time as possible. Anything longer than that, he would get out of there as fast as he could. It didn't say Vayeshev. The Rashbatz says that Shekvar Hoysalo Haftocha Me'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he did have a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he would go, that he was going down, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would go down with him and take him out. And therefore, he said, I'm only going down on a temporary basis. It was absolutely clear to him that this wasn't permanent. I don't know if he knew it would be 210 years, but he said this is only on a temporary basis because of the Haftocha, the Hisha Amda that we spoke about before. The Mesh of Chochmah says an idea that every one of us can apply to our daily lives. The Mesh of Chochmah says, any place you go outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're in Golus. Don't ever forget that for a second. So don't think you're a citizen over here. Yaakov Avinu, even if he wanted to live in Mitzrayim, if he wanted the Vayeshev Sham, you're always going to be a stranger in a strange land. Ger Yeh Zaracha. Be Eretz Lo Lohem. we think we're very comfortable here in America. The Jews in Berlin thought they were very comfortable in the 20s and 30s, at least in the early 30s. The Jews in Spain thought they were very comfortable in Spain. The Jews in Ukraine thought they were very comfortable in Ukraine before the Gzeris Tach V'Tat from Chmelnytsky, Yemach Shemo V'Zichro, who is idolized by the Ukrainian people to this very day, murdered millions of Jewish people, murdered many great Tamidei Chachamim. This is who the Ukrainians look up to as the leader of the father of their country. In every place that we go, remember, you're not a citizen there. You may have citizenship, you may have a passport, you may be financially successful. Meshech Chochmah says, that's how we know that Yaakov didn't go down there to really live there, because Yaakov Avinu knew that the only place for the Jewish people is in Eretz Yisrael. Everything else is a temporary dwelling place. It's not permanent. The Vilna Gaon says a similar idea. Kavonis Yaakov lishtakev Mitzrayim, he says, if that was his intention, they never would have gone out. If Yaakov Avinu said, let's move down to Mitzrayim, they would have taka moved down to Mitzrayim and stayed there. But Yaakov Avinu said, we're not moving down to Mitzrayim permanently. This is a temporary move. And as long as you go in there with the understanding that it's a temporary move, even if you're there for hundreds of years, Nebuch, the Jewish people did not live in Eretz Yisrael for many years. We always had some presence there, but the majority, the vast majority of the Jewish people have always lived since the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash outside of Eretz Yisrael. Actually getting very close in numbers to having the majority of the Jewish people living in Israel. There are those that suggest that within the next 5 to 10, maybe 15 years, the actual majority of Jewish people in the world will actually be living in Eretz Yisrael. So even then, we have to remember that in Galus here, we're never at home. It's only at home in Eretz Yisrael. Then we bring down, it says, Ki ein mir latzon. Continuing this paragraph, it says, "Vayomer Paro l'gur be'eretz Bono." We want to live in Goshen, ki emir letzon, because there's no other place that we can go and pasture our animals. So they ask the following question, which Rashi will answer: why did the Shvatim tell Paro that they came down for the there was no pasture in the land of Canaan, and that's why they came down to Israel? Why did they tell them we came down to get food? So Rashi on the spot reminds us that Yaakov and his family had food. They only went down to Mitzrayim because they weren't sure that their animals would have food. Hashem made a nace for them. They weren't sure Hashem would make a nace for their animals. And therefore, they only went down because of the tzon. So they told Paro the Emes, Ki emir letzon. We didn't have any place to pasture our animals in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why we wanted B'davka to live in Goshen by ourselves. And the Mefarshim point out that Goshen was the closest point in Eretz Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. So it was short, hop, skip, and jump to go back home. They were waiting to go home. Even when they went to Eretz Goshen, they said this is the closest place to Eretz Yisrael. There are those Mefarshim that say it was on the border of Eretz Canaan. And the Shach Torah says that Eretz Goshen was actually swallowed up at one point in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, they really thought they were living as close to, if not even a little bit, in Eretz Yisrael by living in Eretz Goshen. Fascinating idea. Why Bedavka Eretz Goshen? So there's an interesting medrash that's brought down the Pirkei the Rebbe Eliezer that says that Sarah owned Goshen. When Sarah got her ksuba paid off from Paro, when Paro took her, he gave her ksuba. So when he divorced her, when he got rid of her, so he gave her Eretz Goshen. So they said, we'll go live in Eretz Goshen. That's our territory. We don't want to rely upon the largesse of you, Paro. We won't go live in our ancestral home that we got from Sarah. And that's why the B'davka went to Eretz Goshen. The Rashbat says, because they didn't want to live together with Mitzrayim. So the B'davka went to the only place that the Mitzrayim didn't live in, which was Goshen. I don't know why the Mitzrayim didn't live there, but they picked the one place where there wouldn't be any Mitzrayim around, because they know that the secret to their success was not to be amongst the Mitzrayim, not to assimilate. Then we have the statement that we all know, a very familiar statement, B'msei Mi'ot, B'shivim Nefesh Ardu Avosecha Mitzrayim. With 70 people went down Mitzrayim. So everybody loves to talk about, there's only 69, so who is the 70th one? So I'll mention some of the answers that everybody knows. Yocheved is according to one opinion. Yaakov is the 70th person according to another opinion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is considered, he's going down with us to Mitzrayim, so he's considered like the 70th person. There's an interesting one that I had not seen previously, that Serach Bas Asher is considered the 70th person. So that's where you get the count of 70. Okay. There's another opinion from the Rush that says, just like when we say 40 Makos, we only mean 39. And when we count Sviro, we count 50 days, we only count 49. So it says there were only 69 people when we rounded off to 70. There were really only 69. That's what the Rush says. But I guess there's a bigger question. Why was everybody so interested in making the number 70? What would have been terrible if it was 69? Why is everybody trying to say, the Haggadah says B'shivim Nefesh, but it's not 70, it's 69. So why is this idea of 70 so important? So I think that the Abarbanel, and the, based upon the Zohar, says that this is because those 70 people were connected to the 70 nations of the world. And this is an important idea for the world to realize, that the fact that we went down to Mitzrayim with 70 people, that's the zeschus that the world exists. And that because we went into Golus, so every one of the people who went into Golus, so to say, gave a chiyus to one of the nations of the world. And that's why there's a Gemara that says, if only the guy realized that on Sukkot we bring the 70 Purim, the 70 Korbanos, on their behalf, instead of destroying the Beis HaMikdash, they would have put guards around the Beis HaMikdash to prevent the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed. So our lives are intertwined with the rest of the world. We support the rest of the world. Those Shivim Nefesh, they're the source, if you wish, for the 70 nations of the world to exist. Very beautiful idea. The morale gives a simple teretz. The morale says you needed 70 people. That was the critical mass to make sure that the Jewish people were able to propagate and to continue and to build a dynasty. Sometimes it could be illness, sometimes it could be a plague, Rahman al-Itzlan, and things could easily decimate. So 70 was a critical number in order to guarantee that there would be a future of Klal Yisrael. Okay. Then it says in the next paragraph, the same ma'at, it says that we are atosom Hashem Elokecha kikochvei hashamayim l'rov, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us like the stars. What does it mean he made us like the stars? Why bedafka the stars? So the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal is as follows. He says, what is special about the stars? So the Gemara elsewhere says that the stars have a certain knowledge to them. We don't understand what that means. The stars are inanimate objects. But based upon Suk, it says Yitzarim Bidas, right? Those that did Kiddush Levana this past Shabbos night. So there's a minhag to dance afterwards and sing the Kel Adon. And Yitzarim Bidas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Das, whatever that means, to the stars. Yitzarim Bidas, they have Das. So the stars, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, on somewhat of a homiletical basis, so they have the ability to defy Hashem. But when's the last time you saw an astronomical body not be exactly where it's supposed to be? Right? When they send a probe out to Mars, so it lands on Mars, it doesn't miss it. If it does miss it, it's because we miscalculated. But it's not because Mars isn't where it's supposed to be. The astronomical bodies are always exactly where they're supposed to be. And it can calculate exactly when Pluto is going to come around its revolution around the sun. When it will come back 248 years later, it's going to be back in the same spot. And they calculate the revolution of every planet around the sun. It's going to take this planet 2 years to go around. This planet does 50 days to go around. They all know exactly where they're supposed to be. So the praise that the Jewish people are kichochvei hashamayim larov is not only larov, that will be as multitudinous as the stars, but in fact will be as dedicated to following what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants as the stars. What a beautiful Rav Moshe Feinstein. Then we'll end off with this. We're getting close to the end of the hour. It says that the Jewish people were mitzuyonim shom, vaysham legoy melami shoy Yisrael mitzuyonim shom. We were excellent over there. We mitzuyonim, right? When a teacher tells the children that they're mitzuyonim, it means that they're A students, A plus students. So what does it mean that the Jewish people were mitzuyonim? So Rashi and the Machzor Vitri and the Ritva all say a similar idea, that it's telling us over here that we were a nation within a nation. This is what many of the secular people have said. Never before in history have you found one nation being taken out from another nation. And it's true. You can't find any such example in history. You find refugees breaking out. You find certain groups of people managing to get out, but never a whole nation taken out from inside another nation. And that's the idea, that we were a separate nation. If we stay separate and don't intermarry and don't assimilate, we can even acculturate, right? I'm wearing a suit and tie. Goyim wear a suit and tie. I don't wear necessarily a different set of clothing than they do. But the Medrash says that when we wore the same clothing as the Egyptians, ours had tzitzis on it. So yes, we can even acculturate in a certain way. Yes, we have Jewish people playing basketball, but we play it differently. We play it with a yarmulke on. We play it with tzitzis on. We play it without cursing at the other person. We play it like a mensch. So when we even do things that the society does, we still have to do it in a unique Jewish way. And that is what it means, mitzuyonim sham. We stood out. Mitzuyonim means we stood out. We didn't get assimilated with the crowd. Rav Yonker says an interesting idea. He says that our visage, our face, was the similar face as our parents. In other words, we were clearly not intermixing and having immoralities with the Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it when the people were laughing at Avram and said, yeah, sure, you're the father of Yitzchak. It was Avimelech that's the father of Yitzchak. So he changed the parzuf of Yitzchak to look exactly like Avram. So in Mitzrayim, the children looked like their fathers. The sons looked like their fathers. The daughters looked like their mother's mistama. So to show clearly the relationship over here. So we had the parzuf of our parents. Interesting idea. That's what it meant, mitzuyonim. The Ritva says similarly that we wore the tzitzis on the begadim, and it says that our midos as well, that our midos were recognizable. Again, in an office, you can Nebuch sometimes tell who is a cultured person, who's not a cultured person, by the way they talk, by the way they use foul language. So a yid should always be different. And that's one of the messages here that we have to take to our lives today. And talk at the Seder about how we can be different. Let the children say, how do we show that we're different in a secular world where we interact with the secular world? We go to business. We go out into the secular world. But is our action, is our ethics, is it different than the secular world? Or we say, no, you know, I'm religious in the base medrash, but then I go out into the business world, I'm as cutthroat as everybody else. I'm as unethical as everybody else. I cheat as well as everybody else. Rachmana litzlan. Then we're not Jews. Then we're not mitzuyan. And that's, again, the idea, vayhi shom l'goy gadol, that we'll be there as a goy gadol, so people could tell us from our stature, we were great, we were a goy gadol in our quality. And that's what it meant that we mitzuyanim were there, that we were different than the people that we were around. So, this concludes the hour of the shir. I want to thank you all for very much listening and honoring my father by coming to the shir. And hopefully you'll say over the Vertlach at the Seder or at any other point in time and even give a further aliyah to my father's holy neshama. I just wanted to thank all of you for coming and wish everybody that you should all have a chag kosher v'sameach. Thank you very, very much for listening and have a good night.